This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Hello everyone.
大家好.
Selamat datang.
Konnichiwa.
Hola.
안녕하세요.
Assalamualaikum.
And kia ora.
Kia ora everyone. Welcome back to Connecting Cultures Futures, a show by for and about the multicultural people of Dunedin in New Zealand. Today, we have the new board chair for the Pakistan Association of Otago, also known as PAO. We have Ahmed Khan. Kia ora, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Thank you so much for being here today. Usually, you're on this end
yeah.
on the microphone, but I'm really excited to get to know you.
Yeah. It's a good thing to be on the other side of the aisle, because when you're on that side, you are constantly, like, what you're doing, setting the mic, setting yeah. the volumes, and everything is correct. And you let the other person talk. But this time, you know, the rules are switched.
Exactly. You just relax and just answer the questions.
Just answer the questions and let you do the dance.
Exactly. So, Ahmed, you are now the board chair of the Pakistan Association of Otago. Pakistan Association of Otago also has a podcast and radio show with us called Chit Chat with Pau. It is also now an award-winning podcast.
Woo! Yes.
So Otago Access Radio recently had their on-air awards 2025, and Chit Chat with Pau submitted a entry and has won the multicultural category.
Oh, yes, yes, we are the winners. You know, we should be bragging.
How do you feel about that?
Oh, so excited. I mean, two or three things came along, it's so exciting. I mean, I came to Dunedin 2.5 years ago in 2023, and I didn't know about the society or anything at that time. But I met a lot of people, and then I realized there's a society named as Pakistani Association of Otago, PAO, and met lovely people. They came and picked me up from the airport, and, you know, and had all my luggage. My family was there, and I said, oh, I can book up taxi. And I said, no, we'll come and we'll pick you up. And they came and they picked me up, and from the airport dropped me at my place, helped me find a house and everything. And it was so welcoming and warming. And you're like, when you come to someplace new and you're welcomed by such people where they make you feel at home, it's perfect. It's the perfect start to a perfect journey. So then I started working at PAO as a volunteer. And then quickly they asked me they wanted me to be a board member, because I have a governance background and all the stuff and experience. So I said, why not? Because, you know, the society has given so much to me, and I want to give it back to the community. Recently I became the board chair, where I'll try to, as I said previously, the idea of coming to New Zealand and making this society and my vision going forward with the society is different cultures and communities should complement each other rather than compete with each other. So thinking of Muslims in Dunedin, thinking of Kiwis who are non-Muslims, how our culture match, what are the things which we can do to improve our integration, their integration, teaching of other people our culture, how we do things, what we do things, why we do things. For example, it's always very good to do something in Ramadan where not many people know how it's performed, what we do. And even now, I've been living in New Zealand for the last 8 years now. I came in 2017. So since then, every time when I am fasting every year, and there's always someone who asks, oh, you cannot even drink water. And we are like,
Surprise
no, you cannot drink water. So it's just these small things which you tell this community, and I think once they get known, because I think the fear is in the unknown, and once they get to know how things are done, they're like, oh, that's easy. We thought of something else, and it turned out to be different thing. So my idea is to make sure PAO creates a platform or tries to create a platform where communities complement, cultures complement, rather than compete. That's the whole idea. And apart from that, yes, our radio show, it went perfect. we had we started radio show very early on. There were other, but then we rebranded, and me, Anam, and Zuhaib are doing it. It's a very good show. I mean, the idea, my rationale for this show is to bring people and tell the audience that how blessed we are in terms of what sort of talent we have. I remember my first interview was with a lady who had won multiple awards on photography, and then my second interview was with a person who has just won Guinness Book of World Record.
Wow.
And he lives in Dunedin, and I didn't know before, but he has a small problem with his arm. And even then, he was able to win the Guinness Book of World Record. So these are sort of things which I want to highlight in the show. The whole idea is to show what a beautiful place New Zealand is, you know. So yeah, the experience is good. People are enjoying it. I'm enjoying it. I love to do it every fortnight or, you know, whenever our show is here, it's my turn. But it's perfect.
Yeah. And who else is in the Chit Chat team?
Oh, we have Anam. She is the president of our society. And then we have Zuhaib. He is a scientist. He is usually in his lab working on creating medicines and working with DNA, RNA, you know, all that flashy stuff.
Very cool.
And he's very good. He has been doing for a long time now. So he's the brewest of us all. So and me and Anam have started recently. I think Anam has started before me, but I'm the youngest in terms of, you know, experience. So I just call myself youngest just for the sake of it.
Again, you all compliment each other. So
yeah, it's different perspective. Anam does it in Urdu and Punjabi because she thinks there are communities who would like to listen to their, you know, homeland language. Sometimes, because as a multilingual person whose mother tongue is not English, I still have this thing, not sure about other people, where most of the conversation I do not translate, but sometimes I do translate English into my own mother tongue. And then, you know, it takes a split second to understand and respond to it. And sometimes you respond in total gibberish because you do not understand what you've done. But there are people who would love to listen to. My mom listens to Anam's podcast in Urdu and Punjabi because, you know, her main tongue is English, sorry, Urdu, so and Punjabi. So, but yeah, it's a mixed bag for us.
Yeah, it's really exciting how mixed you create the chit chat with Pao.
Yeah.
And it just makes sense because there's a lot of different types of audiences that can listen to it. So you've arrived in New Zealand in 2017 and you came to Dunedin in 2023. I do want us to talk about your migration journey to Aotearoa, but before that, maybe let's go way back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we like to go on our time machine and just, you know, go back and back from where you grew up.
Oh, I was born in Pakistan, Lahore, Pakistan. It's one of the biggest cities in Pakistan. It's part of Punjab. So Punjab is a province which is half of the Punjab is in Pakistan and half of the Punjab is in India. And we are split by the border. So Lahore is on the border of Punjab, and the mother tongue that we speak over there is Punjabi. So both the Indian Punjab and Pakistani Punjab, mostly we speak Punjabi, but then there are other regional languages. As you go from north to south of Punjab, your Punjabi converts into Saraiki. That's another regional language. So I was born in Lahore. I'm youngest of my other three siblings. All of them are in different continents. My brother, one of my brothers in Pakistan, my one brother and sister are in England. I'm in New Zealand. So we started off in one place. Now we are in three different continents. That's how life has turned out.
And what about your parents during that
time? My mom and dad, they also live in Pakistan. Lahore. They just live next to my brother's house. And the way we live over there is a bit different. We have multi-storied houses rather than one single-story house. So on top floor, my brother and his wife and his kids live. On bottom floor, my mom and dad live over there. And my mom is and dad are both retired now. And my mom came for a visit 3 months ago, 3 to 4 months ago. And she's going back on 15th of January, so it's breaking her heart. But, you know, she enjoyed here. She loved here. She beat the – because when she came, it was very hot in Pakistan. It was very winter here. So when she was leaving airport in Lahore, it was literally around 45 degrees, 46 degrees. And she had a big and, you know, in June and July, we have full-on cold weather in New Zealand. So she had her, you know, jacket and everything, and she was sweating, and she was like, why am I wearing this? I said, you will need us when you come to New Zealand. Yeah, so that's my background. Out of four, I was the youngest, the most mischievous one.
Of course. The hardest one.
Yeah, the hardest one, yeah.
What did your parents do before they retire?
My mom was full-time house worker, house job. I mean, she raised us, and that's the biggest job. And my dad was working in the government, so he was a bureaucrat. And things with bureaucrats is a bit different as compared to New Zealand over there. So he was into district management, so where he would have just district management group where he would be, because we do not have mayors and everything over there or counselors. We do have counselors, but the way it's totally different. Most powers are with the bureaucrats, where they have to manage, for example, one would be taking care of all the rubbish, one would be taking care of the police, security, gardens, and all the stuff. So my father moved from departments to departments. Sometimes he would be in the gardens area where he would have to manage all the gardens of Lahore, because we have a lot of gardens over there. Mm. And sometimes he would be transferred to a completely different city, which would be a smaller city. But then again, when there are smaller cities, you have less personnel, less people working. So he would, rather than being in charge of, let's say, only police, he would be in charge of police and other hospitals and all this stuff. So that's what he did. He was a bureaucrat, and he got retired in 2010.
He got to do different kinds of jobs during his time.
Yes, and it's totally different in Pakistan. There's not much of a work-life balance. Sometimes he would go early morning and would come very late at around 10 or 11 p.m. at night, and then early morning he would go. So it was very difficult for, well, it's totally different. The concept of working is totally different in Pakistan as compared to what we have a concept of working here in New Zealand.
Is that still the same now?
More or less. Because think of it, we have 5 million people, more or less, in New Zealand, the whole population. In Pakistan, we have 230 million people. So the competition is totally different. Even the city from where I come is, I think, 15 million, 10 to 15 million, so which is three times the size of New Zealand. So when you have more people, yes, you have more resources, but there's a lot of competition. And then let's suppose you are catering for one teacher for four students over here. It would be one teacher for 40 students over here, over there in Pakistan. So obviously, with increased population, your workload increases. And once your workload increases, you do not usually have that much of leverage where you can say, hey, I can maybe hire more people and all this stuff.
Mm.
Because the budgets are limited, you cannot hire more people, but you have to take care of a lot of people. So that sort of dynamic is still there. It's one of the problems that I would say Pakistan hasn't fixed yet. And if they fix the management, they would be able to fix a lot of problems in Pakistan.
It's interesting to hear all of this, because it seems like you know, there's a lot about a country that we need to learn more about.
Well, I had Steve Walker over here. He's also a counselor at Dinian. And guess where he found his wife? In Pakistan.
That's so insane.
He was traveling to Pakistan, northern areas, because if you see, I would ask my listeners to go back and listen to the podcast on Chit Chat with Pao with Steve Walker, where he explains how he thinks the northern areas of Pakistan's of Pakistan, he's a Kiwi. He has lived most of life in England and New Zealand. And he says he believes he has visited more than 102 countries. That's not a small thing, visiting 102 countries. And he thinks northern areas of Pakistan are the most beautiful in the world, because you will have deserts in one place, you'll have mountains, you'll have K2 and all that stuff, Nanga Parbat base camp, and they are so beautiful. The only problem is how you reach there, because the roads are not that much paved. As I said, the management is a bit of a problem. The best thing about Pakistan is, I would say, the people, because the perception is, you know, it's very hostile and all this stuff, but actually it's not. Once you go there, once you talk to people, you're like, oh, wow, they're very, very good and welcoming people. From where I belong, I'm a Pathan, so I belong from Khyber Pakhtunkhwa area, my forefathers, and then they migrated to Punjab. So although I'm a Pathan, but I'm a Punjabi Pathan, because I've lived most of my life in Punjab and where we speak Punjabi. But in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, where we speak Pashto, where my ancestors are from, 20, 30 years back, there were no hotels. Why there were no hotels? Because if you are a traveler, you would go to some place and you would simply knock someone's house's door and say, I'm a traveler, I want to stay. And they usually have a baithak. They call a room, which is known as baithak, where you can go and sleep for a night. The house, the person who owns the house would probably provide you food with shelter for a night and stay. So it's very warm and welcoming in Pakistan. But again, the media has a different perception. It's more like when you believe it, and sometimes you don't even believe it. Is it real? I've been listening to the news the whole life, and it's totally different.
Well, it's good that you've teased the listeners to listen to your interview with Steve Walker.
You know.
So, you can find Chit Chat with Pao on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Otago Access Radio. I'm interested to hear about what you do now versus what you thought you would be doing as a child, you know, just like growing up, the things you're passionate about.
It's a roller coaster. I always wanted to be a pilot.
Oh.
You know, every boy's dream is to be a pilot, to fly jets and all this stuff, you know. After watching Maverick, Top Gun, and, you know, you're like, I want to be a pilot, all this stuff. So since child, I wanted to be a pilot. And then my mom wanted me to be a doctor, because my older sister is a doctor, my brother is an engineer. So I was the one who had no friendship with studies, who was the one who said, I don't want to study, I don't like studying. Because the way we study over here is different than in Pakistan. In Pakistan, we have a lot of competition and stuff. So we have papers every year to go to the next class or next year. My brother and sisters would be top one in class, top two in class, and I was bottom five, bottom six.
How did it feel like as a child to be in
that? Didn't care.
Genuinely didn't care.
I didn't care. My mom would go to principal's office, or, you know, when they usually give awards to the first three students in the assembly for every class, and she would receive award from my sister, might have to go to the brothers, and then she would go to the principal's office to
about you.
That he will work next year.
Yes.
And it's just, I didn't like studying. I was a late bloomer in studying.
But what did you like doing?
Just playing, do nothing. I love video games. I love to play. I remember my brothers had Nintendo, and they used to hide it from me, because whenever they went out to study, they used to go to tuitions and all the stuff. I was the youngest one. I was not going to tuitions. My mom said, I will teach him. So what I would do is I'll keep finding out where they hid the Nintendo and Segas and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'll put them on the telly and, you know, play it. I knew, for example, they were out from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m.
You knew their schedule.
Yeah, I knew the schedule. I'll play for 2 hours. And then at that time, there used to be a doctor, which was sort of a power supply for the Nintendos. And if you played for a long time, it used to get very hot. And my brother is 6 years old, one is 4 years old. So I never fitted into their friendship circle. They are the ones who are friends. That's the little annoying brother. So what I would do is, before 1 hour, I would wrap it up, put it in the freezer. So
trying to avoid
it. Trying to make sure it's cooled down and put it exactly as is. And I did it for 2 years. And they had
very smart,
yeah,
though.
So I was the laziest person of the house. So the thing with the laziest people is they always try to find the shortest and smartest possible way to do stuff. For example, my sister, she's a doctor now. She's a dentist. She's living in England, next to London. And she would always go, it has to be, you know, everything in order, everything all in place, studying, all the notes are there. And I always thought, if I have to learn 5 chapters, and out of 5 chapters, if I learn 3, I'll pass the course. I'll do the bare minimum at that time. So I was that sort of a person. And the next one, my mom wanted me to be a doctor, and I tried my luck in medical. I hated maths. I hated biology. I hated arts. The only thing which I loved was games, you know, video games and all this stuff for some reason. Then I tried my luck in medical, didn't like it. And then I thought, what should I do? And one of my friends said, why don't we do business studies? I said, what is business studies? And it was more my friend circle was similar to me. We had no idea what we were doing at that time.
You found your people.
We found our people. we were the misfits of the society at that time. We thought of thinking, what should we do? And two things came up. One was bachelor's in computer sciences and bachelor's in business. Bachelor in computer sciences, somebody told me you'll have to do advanced maths and stuff. And I told my friend, hey, do you know what is advanced maths? He said, I don't even know what maths is. So we decided, we are not going to be. I wanted to be BSCS, but I said, oh, no, business studies. And then when I went to business studies, I was the one who hated who hated in maths. And then eventually I liked it that much because it was all natural to me, the business studies, accounting, finance, economics. It made sense. I think I was street smart since the beginning. I was not a bookish person.
Mm.
I always knew how to make my way through street smartness, through talking to people. And this is what business is. You go, you present, you pitch your ideas, and you do the numbers. And if you're talking to someone with financial ideas, it is maths, but it is art as well in terms of finance, for example, investing and all this stuff. And eventually I did my PhD in finance. So I started from a person who hated maths, ended up as a person who did his PhD in finance and presented, published a lot of papers in A-star journals and all stuff. So I think the whole idea is once you connect to what you want to do or what you like to do, you excel in that particular role. And then I got scholarship. Then I started teaching. So I was the one who didn't like studying, and I ended up teaching at university in Pakistan. You know, life changes.
Oh.
And my sister thinks, sister and brother, older brothers, they always talk about, oh, he's a teacher. Imagine what will happen to the students.
That is so funny.
But then again, I mean, the philosophy is the same for me. And I think we focus too much on what others are doing, what we have to do as a society, as a norm, what others will think if I don't do this, blah, blah, blah. And I think by the end of the day, it all works out as long as you are happy doing it. So if you ask me if I regret not studying from year 1 to year 12, I do not. I would do the same thing again because those are still one of the best memories with me and my friends who were not studying. And honestly, I had 4 friends. All are very successful at the moment, and we never studied. So I'm not saying promoting don't study. It's just
stay in school, kids.
Yeah, it's just enjoy the life at the moment, and eventually you'll find out what you wanted to do. So I did my PhD in finance. I was teaching at university in Pakistan. Then for a short time, I taught at University of Waikato. And then after 10 years of teaching, one day I was like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore, you know. And that was the time, because I think you should do something as long as you want to do it, you like doing it. As soon as going to work becomes a burden on your health, on your mind, and you're like, oh, I have to go to work today, you should think about something else. Mm-hmm. Then I thought, hey, I always wanted to, I've done business studies. Why shouldn't I go to a business and, you know, in industry rather than teaching? So the goal was to do PhD and keep teaching at the university. But as I started teaching before, and once it was time to get benefit of your PhD, I left the university and I went to industry, and I started working in electricity industry as a strategy analyst in regarding their finances and their long-term strategy on policy, what should we do, why shouldn't we do it, why should we do it, all this stuff. And since 2022, I started working in TQT, which is next to Hamilton. And then I moved to Aurora Energy here in Dunedin, and here I am the revenue and pricing manager. I do the annual pricing for all of Dunedin, Queenstown, Central Otago, Clyde, Cromwell, Wanaka. So we have around 95,000 customers. For them, I do the annual pricing, how much revenue we are going to get, why should we get this much revenue. And then there are a lot of consultations from Commerce Commission and Electricity Authority. And then I write policy documents with them. That what should be our policy. Obviously, the policy goes to the CEO and the executive leadership, but, you know, I'm the one who is churning the wheel. And then it goes to them, it gets approved, and then we have Aurora policy. So,
wow.
So from academic to I'm purely into industry now. Let's see how long I stay before I think of something else.
And I love that, you know, you just really go with the flow and accept what's next, what's coming for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Are your parents proud of what you do now?
Oh, my mom still thinks I'm not the real doctor.
Even though you have a PhD.
I'm Dr. Ahmed Khan officially.
Yeah.
But
well, you are a doctor.
I am a doctor. Yeah. Not the real doctor. Oh,
accomplishing her dreams.
And then I say, yes, your daughter is also not a real doctor. She's a dentist. She's not.
I love this because you're showing how important it is in my culture as well. You know, our parents do get a say on what path we take in some ways too.
Exactly. You know, Asian parents, I mean, it's a competition since the day you're born.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's if you're a boy, you're an engineer. If you're a girl, you're a doctor. Mm. So that sort of thing. But, you know, it all works out well. I think I'm more sort of happy-go-lucky sort of a person in this sense. And I never thought to be. I still have this thing. The biggest worry in my life that I ever have taken is during my PhD years. When I was doing PhD, because you are creating something which no one has done before. And that's the hardest time of my life. That was the hardest time of life. Otherwise, I just think everything can be solved. Just takes time.
Mm. Yeah. Thinking about coming to New Zealand and starting a life here, did you come with your family at that time?
Or? Oh, yeah. I came alone at in the start, because when I got the scholarship, I had no plans to come to go for PhD abroad if I didn't have the scholarship, because I had a daughter and she was just born. So I came to New Zealand in 2016 December to start my PhD in January 2017, and my daughter was born in 2016 January. So Parisha, she so it was very hard for me to leave her when she was not even 1 year old. Mm. So, but then again, I didn't want to come to a totally new city with wife and kid and then realize, oh, what should I do? So my idea was I'll go there, see for 6 months if I like it or not, if how do we settle down, and then I'll bring the family back. Because at that time they were living with either my mom or my wife's mom, you know.
They had their support.
They had their support. My wife is also teaching. She at that time she was teaching in Pakistan. Now she teaches at Otago University. So she had a job over there, and we had support for Parise, my daughter. So her grandmoms would take care of her. So the whole idea was first I go test the waters, and then if I like it, we'll move. And I came here and I really liked it. That's very clean. The first thing which attracted me the most, people see beauty and all the stuff, it's just the cleanliness. It's the no air pollution or very less air pollution. And when you breathe, you are breathing very clean air. That's one of the best things you could ever have. Because as someone who's coming from Pakistan, who's coming from Lahore, which is turning to a very polluted city because of a lot of people and air pollution especially, not so much of water pollution, but air pollution is very bad over there. It gets better when you go to smaller cities or the villages. But then again, if you're living in one of the mega cities, you're like, oh, it's too polluted. And you have to wear masks and stuff. So when I came over here, that was the first thing. And I still remember I called my wife and I said, oh, it's so clean. It's so, the air is so clean. And I love it over here. That's the first refreshing thing that you get. And that was my experience with New Zealand.
So what was the first city that you arrived to?
Oh, I arrived, it's a funny story. I arrived in Auckland. So in Pakistan, when we say English, we are usually referring to British English. And when we are reading or writing, it's British way. But most of us who listen is the Hollywood English, which is very clear, and you usually have subtitles, and it's a different way of speaking, yes. You know. And when they are talking in movies and stuff, they want you to understand. They do not talk very fast and all the stuff. So when I came over here, I had no idea. My mobile internet was not working, obviously, because I didn't have the SIM. So I arrived over here. I went to Auckland. I was on a very long flight from Bangkok to Auckland. It was around 12 hours. And the food they gave me was, I didn't like the food. So the night before, I didn't eat anything. And in the in the airplane, I also didn't eat much. Aww. I lived on, they were giving peanuts and chips and, you know, water and all the stuff. I said, when I'll go to New Zealand, I'll eat something. Because I came from Pakistan. Lahore has a food street that is open 24/7, and it's 7 kilometers long, and it has full restaurants. You can go anytime in Lahore, and you can get food, cooked food, and you can eat over there. I had no idea about New Zealand. I arrived at around 6 p.m., the shuttle picked me up and dropped me at Otago Student Village, Hamilton Student Village. So I went to the student village at around 8 p.m. I was very hungry at that time. And I met with a beautiful lady. She was the administrator over there who would give me the keys to my room and stuff. Now, the first thing she said was she gave me documents to document and everything. And she said, darling, why don't you fill this? And I'll come back in 10 minutes. Do you have a PIN? And and at that time, I had no idea. And I said, yeah, I have a PIN. So I opened up a mobile. I start searching the emails and start typing PIN. What is the PIN? I thought she's asking for some PIN.
Yeah, number, like a number, code.
Code or stuff. I kept searching and internet was working and I was cursing myself. I said, why didn't I take the screenshots of the emails? Because I don't have the internet right now.
Maybe they need a verification that you're you or something.
So I was like, oh my God, what should I do now? And this is the first time I've ever been to outside of Pakistan. And after 10 minutes, the lady came back and she said, oh, you don't have the PIN. I said, no, sorry, I forgot. I did not have. I started showing my mobile. She looked at me confused. And she gave me a pen. And she said, here you pin. I was like, what? So that was my first experience in New Zealand.
That's
because
crazy.
It's totally different the way we speak pen and pin yeah. over there. And I was so relieved. I was like, oh, this is what they're asking. Then I went to my room at around 8:30. And then I thought, why don't I get a quick shower? I was very hungry. I wanted to go out right away. And I thought, why don't I get a quick shower? And the lady also gave me some maps of Hamilton. And at that time, I didn't ask her, hey, what are the food places? And I was like, I'll just look at the map and, you know, follow the map, explore and be adventure. At 8:30, I went to the shower room, took a quick shower. Around 9 p.m., I changed clothes and everything. And I went out. I was like, oh, let's go and eat food. Everything was closed.
What were you thinking?
Everything was closed. I'm like, where am I? And for the whole night, I was hungry. And I mean, the day before, I was hungry. And then I hardly slept because I was very hungry. And then I woke up around 6 a.m. in the morning.
You didn't eat
for almost around 40 hours, more than 40 hours. And I was just drinking water, trying to survive. So next day at around 7 a.m., I went out, tried to find out, and there was a local fish and chip shops. I just went there. He said, would you like, I still remember, I said, give me anything.
Literally anything.
She started to ask me options. Do you want some ketchup? I said, anything.
Yeah.
Just fish and chips. Just give
just
me that.
Food.
Just food. And I said, that was my first experience. It was good. But
and then, like, did you find out if there were any 24-hour restaurants?
No, because I didn't have internet.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the way I could go was look at the physical map and look around. Yeah. And, you know, when you're first here, it's nighttime. It was very dark at that time.
Mm.
And I was like,
what month was this?
It was December.
Mm.
So I got around 9. I walked till 9:30. It started to get dark. And you're like, you know, I didn't have any internet, Google Maps or stuff. I was like, what if I get lost or stuff? I want to go home and sleep in the bed. Don't want to sleep on the road. And yeah, so that was my first experience. But then next day, started to figure out a few things. I made some friends in Hamilton there was a friend who just came a day before me. He was Indian. He came from Delhi. And we speak the same language, Urdu, Hindi, so he can understand me. He was able to understand me. I was able to understand him.
Aww.
And then he said, you should have knocked my door. I had peanut butter and jam. Peanut butter and bread. I'm like, thank you for telling me now. So it was good. That was my first experience in New Zealand.
Wow.
But overall, I would say, you know, whenever you go somewhere from where you have lived a long time, for everything you start comparing, for example, things are very cheap in Pakistan. When I got here, the bread was of, I think, $2.50 or $2. And I was like, and then the first thing what I did was convert $2 into Pakistani rupees. I was like, I could buy 4 breads over there for this thing. And then the vegetables, one cucumber is of $3. It's like, wow, you got a whole kg of cucumbers over there. So obviously, you are doing comparisons. Mm. That's completely natural for anyone to come from one place to other. Not just for traveling, but if you want to, you know, call it a home later on. So for the first year, I was like, for the first year and a half, I was like, I'll do my PhD. I'll go back because it's too difficult to survive, you know, expensive and all the stuff. But then again, over the time, you start to love the place, you start to love the people, you start to enjoy the calmness, especially in Dunedin. When I came to Dunedin, my company flew me in. I actually said no to this job initially, but I thought I'll not go. It's too far, Dunedin, sort of end of the world and all the stuff.
Did you know much about Dunedin before you came from Hamilton?
No, I didn't know.
You've never traveled down here?
No, never traveled. So the company flew me in, booked her the Quest Hotel for me and my family and gave me a car and said, hey, you have 3 days. It's just enjoy and see how it looks, Dunedin looks, and food is on them. So gave me a card for the restaurant and food was, you know, you could get the food and stuff from there. So for 3 days, first day I didn't like. Second day I realized something. I thought, Hamilton is too much traffic. It's only 10 minutes from every 10 to 15 minutes from one place to other. And you can be anywhere. Mm-hmm. So I like Dunedin. That's how I came to Dunedin.
It's the traffic.
It's the traffic. Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah, because in Hamilton, my commute from work was, because what was in different city, it was 1 hour, 15 minutes in the morning and 1 hour, 15 minutes in the evening. And that too, if you're lucky and there's no traffic. If there's traffic, you can convert that 2 hour, 30 minutes into 3 hours. So I used to go to office 3 days a week. And so that is 9 hours of travel every week. And I hated that travel. I was like, oh, wow, that's too much. And also lived in Auckland for a short stint, a month, and the traffic was horrible. So moving from there to here, I realized having no traffic is a blessing. And when we are getting 2 minutes or 1 minute delay because of traffic, it's not a traffic. It's just, you know, just listen to the song.
Yeah, yeah, just chill.
Just chill. Yeah, it's not much. So yeah.
What about your lifestyle change, you know, besides having a bit more time than spending it in traffic?
Yeah. I've started to go more on beaches because in Hamilton, Hamilton's sort of landlocked. It doesn't have many beaches, so you have to travel far. But in Hamilton, in Dunedin, it's 15 minutes you can go to Brighton Beach, 15 minutes you can go to Tomahawk, 15 minutes you can go to other side of, 30 minutes you can do Viola Lake, Lake Viola, I'm more outdoorsy in Dunedin as compared to I was in Hamilton. That's a lifestyle change, which I think is a good thing. Because I was talking to my wife, I said, I think it was Nugget Point. And before Nugget Point, there's a Kaka Point, Beach View Point. And we were going from there. And we also see our sea lion over there. And I told my wife, people literally pay for these views and it's free for us. How lucky we are, you know. There are people who come and visit Dunedin. They fly from sometimes Australia, sometimes North Island, sometimes from other countries. My mom flew all the way from Pakistan to come and see Dunedin. So obviously when she's here, she bought the ticket. She has her expenses. So she's paying every day to see this view.
To appreciate the place.
The place. But for us, it's free, you know. So we are the lucky ones.
Yeah. And what is stopping us to, you know, not visit,
keep it clean, keep it green, make sure it's sustainable, not for us, for future generations. I didn't know this before, but since my kids, I have 3 kids now, so every time I think, I think of what it would look like for my daughters when they grow up. Oh. So that sort of sense of thing is what drives you now as a person, what drives me to make a better change in society. That's what I think. Yeah.
What's it like raising kids here?
It's a mixed bag. Obviously, there are a few things culturally which you would want, which you can never get here, and you sort of make a bit of sacrifice. But then again, there are a few stuff which you do get here, such as good public schools and all the stuff. In Pakistan, it's all public schools are not very good. You have to go to the private ones. I used to go in public school for some, well, it depended on my dad's, in which city he was transferred. Sometimes we were in bigger cities where I would go to private school and public schools were also good. And sometimes we were transferred to a very small city where we only had public schools, but they were not good. So, number one. Number two is, you know, the language is very important part of your life. With language, you communicate, you say stuff, you even with some short words, you explain the other person, the whole idea behind something. That is the power of the language. But for my kids, English is their mother tongue now, because my oldest one, when she came here, she was just 1 year old. So she has grew up in Kiwi system, and her language is Kiwi. And she when she speaks to me, she dumbs down her English to make me understand and with my accent. Mm. But when she's with friends, she's just blah, 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 speaking Kiwi English, Kiwi accent and all this stuff. And she speaks Urdu, but not in a Pakistani way, but I would say 20% Kiwi way. But my middle one, when she speaks Urdu, she speaks as if I'm talking to some Kiwi, because her Urdu is totally English Urdu. Her accent is not there. She hardly speaks Urdu. So I think one regret would be that they are not learning Urdu. But then again, it's a global city. I mean, who knows where they would be living later on in their lives? Would they live in New Zealand? Would they go to some other country? All the stuff. So that's one regret. But then again, there are many positives which overcome this sort of sacrifice of your language. We do try to speak Urdu in our house, but sometimes you're telling your kid something in Urdu, and they are not even understanding. And then you have to switch to English. And then I said, finish your food. So
it becomes less satisfaction.
Less satisfaction, yeah. And yeah, it's just the language. It's the language, because language is just not the mode of communication. It's the whole culture.
Mm.
And they would be missing out on so many books they could have read, and they're in Urdu. So many Islamic literature is in Urdu. So many Pakistani history is in Urdu. So I would want them to read Urdu. That's the idea. That's the goal. But let's see if they can achieve it or not. Yeah.
What about the support system you have here? You know, being part of the Pakistan Association of Otago will definitely help have that sense of community. And sometimes your family does come and visit. Do you feel like you're supported here? Because back home, you know, you have literally everyone.
Yeah, I think we are lucky to have PAO, Pakistan Association of Otago, where we have all families together, sitting here, talking, enjoying, running festivals. For example, we have Eids, the big Eid and the small Eid. That's the easier way to explain. And then we have Ramadan. So we have iftaris, where we breakfast all together. And then when my kids learn those things, they understand what was our culture and what are the do's and don'ts of our culture, what is accepted and what is not accepted in our culture. For example, my oldest one, Parishe, last year, every Friday she had a fast every Friday. She started off with Friday, but then she had to go to school on Friday. I said, why not do it on Saturday? Because, you know, I want her to go to school. Don't want to take off. But Saturdays would be easier for her to, you know, start, because she was just 8 years old last year. 9 years old. So support system is there. Now we are developing, especially with this Pakistan Association of Otago, where whenever a new family comes in, we go to them, we talk to them, we explain them what is there, what is not there. For example, I do not want someone to come to New Zealand and be empty stomached for 48 hours.
Yes, you know what that's like.
So I've lived the experience. I do not want other people to experience. For example, a few days ago, last month, I went to pick up a family who was coming over here. I got to know about them from a Facebook group, and they said, if anybody does it, I'll come and I'll pick you up. So I picked them up. They came at a later time, so I had already some food in my car for them. And then for the next 2-3 days, I bought some groceries, and, you know, so that they can at least have breakfast and everything for two, 3 days. So that sort of stuff, I think this is what community is. This is how we should be running community, where you welcome new people, you you make them feel supported.
Hmm. And outside of the work you do with your community and outside of your jobs, what are things that bring you joy right now in Dunedin?
Oh, in Dunedin, outside of work, you know, with work and with kids and this community, life gets very busy. But whenever I get free time, as I said, I have this habit of playing games. I used to play a lot of
games. You're still a gamer.
I still try to find some time for the games. During my PhD, I used to play a lot of Tekken. That's a fighting game.
Yeah.
It's very famous in New Zealand and all over the world, actually. So I was one of the tournament. It was a national tournament where, you know, you start from the bottom and then you go up. I ended up fifth in New Zealand. So, and then my PhD got finished. And then I started to, because in PhD, you get more time. Your code is running. You can't do anything on the computer. So you open up your console, and because you have to sit in the front of the computer in case some error comes in and you have to look at the error. So I used to spend time by playing games at that time. Now I do play, but not that much. But I think one thing that brings me joy is not doing anything, playing video games.
Yeah.
That's the best thing.
So all the hard work of sneaking your siblings' console while they're at tuition, and it all pays off.
All pays off, yeah. The irony is, at that time, I had a lot of time. Now I have consoles sitting in front of my, under my telly, and I don't even get time to play them for two
no
for weeks.
No one's stopping you.
But still, life is stopping me.
Exactly.
So I
the comparison of being a child and, like, you know, an adult and having this time.
This time, yeah. Somebody said, what would you do if you win lotto and then play video games 2 months straight on? No talking, no work, nothing. Yeah. And then I'll think of, what business should I start?
So you'll be in a cave somewhere.
In a cave, yeah.
What are you excited for? You know, it's the end of the year and we are very excited for the new year as well coming up.
Yeah, for me, it's for my work, it's the busiest time because it's end of the regulatory year and we have to price and everything. So my work is going well. I'm just excited to finish it off before Christmas. And then I want to go to Christchurch with my mom because we have more holidays this year for some reason. So I'll take them off, take 10 days off, and go with mom, see Christchurch, see other places, such as Timaru and stuff. So we'll have I have the whole trip planned from 24th of December till 31st of January. So I'm excited about that one. And yeah, and also because this next year would be the first year for my chairmanship, board chair. So I'm excited. What can I bring to the society? Ooh. And new functions, new things. One thing I'm really excited about, since I'm a finance person, I've seen this a lot. Not many people are finance literate. They are how investments work, when should they start saving, when should they stop saving, not stop saving. Stop saving in a sense that to pay off the debt, how does the mortgage works, how does the Kiwi Saver works. So I want to start, I'm thinking of having a workshop, a day's workshop, where I'll call everyone who wants to join regarding financial literacy. That's my biggest project for the next year.
That's very cool.
Yeah, because I was talking to someone who has a house for 10 years and they still do not understand how their mortgage works. And for me, someone who is a financial professional, it's a one-minute job to understand what the numbers are, how they would look like. So I think that is something which I need to work on next year.
And people can look forward to that on the Pakistan Association of Otago Facebook page.
Yes. I'll make sure that it goes over there and we advertise it, and it's open to everyone who wants to come and join. A bit of clarification, it will not be a financial advice because I'm not a financial advisor, but it'll be more sort of a lived experiences. What do I understand of it?
And it's about education as
well. Yes, about education.
Thank you so much, Ahmed. This is really great. I feel like I got to know you in a different level because, yeah, there's so much about you that now I know. Like, I didn't realize you were a younger son, and there's so many personalities that come with that.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me. And it was like, yeah.
Thanks for listening to Connecting Cultures Features on ORFM.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.